Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about negotiation skills. And of course, as leaders, we have lots. But let's talk about specific traits, specific skills that we're going to need, that we're going to use, and being a practical people and not just a theoretical show, we'll talk about, well, how we do this and what is involved. So what negotiation skills do we need to lead successfully within our context of alternative dispute resolution, mediation, negotiation? What skills do we as leaders need? You're all after my own heart. Yes, thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. Lots of people are talking about enforcement of the civility rules. And sometimes that is complicated. And that is a negotiation skill. Because if we don't have a civil, convivial atmosphere with which to work, well, gee willikers, we're not going to get very far. Because we're just going to go into disrepute. We're going to go into argument. We're never going to manage to get a successful outcome. So enforcement of the civility rules. Absolutely. We're going to talk about that first because, quite frankly, you can say them, but you got to have some teeth. Our second one, negotiation skills, is team building, I see, that we need a common goal, right? Team building, so that we understand that we really are a team, even if we're quite diverse. I like this one, too. This one's very, very good point about negotiation skills. You have to think about the agendas of the people involved. What do they really want? What are they there for? What is happening? The agendas of the employer also. In this show, we call whoever it was that had the good sense to bring us in as leader, the employer. It does not necessarily represent an employment relationship. It is just a generic term. So we're going to use the word employer as a generic term for whoever, whatever, because sometimes it's a board vote, whoever brought us in as leader. We're going to call them the employer. Whoever we maybe even report back to, right? Yeah. Yes, whoever it is that we are responsible to for the successful outcome, right? Right. Well, that is a good point. Sometimes someone is an employer, but they're doing it to help someone else, as in you're getting paid by maybe a grant or something, but the source of the money for your payment is not exactly your employer. It's whoever it is that brought you in and is taking an interest. Right? Right. Going to need some empathy. Yes. Remember to teach and to have. Remember that. And remember that empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. I'm going to call this a negotiation skill, too. I think this is a really valid point, that sometimes one of your negotiation skills, is being flexible in your leadership style. Maybe being flexible all the way around is a negotiation skill, huh? So that if you came in with a preconceived notion, and let's face it, we're human beings, we always do, and hopefully your preconception was not a bias, But it was just an idea about how things were going to go because, well, you get to be kind of a specialist in a certain area, so you've seen these types of issues before, for example, and you have an idea how in your head how you think it's going to go and what you think you're going to be doing and like that, and you have to be flexible. You have to be flexible in your attitude, in your leadership style, in your thinking, because sometimes it's not exactly what you thought. And you have to understand that. And not quite a... I've seen leaders, you've probably seen this too, they come with kind of a preconception of what we're going to do, how long it's going to take, and like that. And even if it's not really valid, it's not really true, it's not going to work for this particular group, they try to squish the group into their preconceived mold, right? They try to insist that this is what's supposed to happen. And the answer is no, these negotiations are different than the last ones you did because this is now and that was then. And yes, of course we rely on experience. And yes, of course we think about what happened last time. And yes, of course it has an impact. But it's not the be-all and the end-all. It's not something that is necessarily going to happen this time. Right? Right. So the emphasis is really on flexibility for negotiation skills. I like this one, too, because we actually try to do it. I don't know if we'd call it a negotiation skill, but people are talking about it, and I think it is. It's something to remember. Remember to celebrate each success. Because during a negotiation, during any kind of a, well, something where people need to get together to reach a successful outcome, it's human nature to kind of forget how bad off you were to begin with. Right? How low down, how not anywhere close to agreement you were. Because this has taken a while, and it looks like, oh, my God, we're not getting anywhere. But the answer is yes, we are. It's just that it's complicated, and we need to work it through. But so celebrate each success. Also, you want to keep going forward because, quite frankly, you've only got so much time, and oftentimes, so much funding is also the key to this, right? Right. Okay, I can accept this. This is kind of a statement, and it's true. It's a criticism, and I accept it completely. We've had the same recipes going for like 6 weeks. I keep not getting to the recipe part because we have such a fabulous discussion. And so people are putting potluck food as a tool under negotiation skills, right? Yeah, so we try, because you guys figure that if it's on my list, we'll get to it. You know that's wise. And I do apologize. I was actually thinking of changing the recipes because I got tired of thinking about them. But you guys went, no, we want to hear it. Okay. My apologies. That is my fault. I don't do the timing properly. And we get off into a conversation, and then I look up, and it's got, ooh, we're up. This is the end of the show. And I'm like, oh, we didn't do it. Okay, let's get to it so we can get to the last topic on our list, which is food as a tool. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, civility rules. They're really, really important because they permeate everything, essentially speaking. The civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. That seems simple enough because we are not rude people. But in the heat of negotiation, sometimes things happen, right? Yeah. And so the civility rules are deceptively simple. We won't be rude to each other. You announce them. I do this each and every time, even if, in my personal opinion, this group will not have a problem because I've dealt with them before, because they're fairly much in agreement and like that. I announce it no matter what, And if it's the right group, they all go, yeah. and like that, civility rules. You need to announce them immediately and right away. You announce them right when you get together. But you need to enforce them immediately is the key to it. Consistently and fairly. Enforce immediately. Consistently and fairly, even if you think one side is indeed more viable than the other. That's your third party impartial, and everybody has to be civil to everybody, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Do not wait until things get out of hand and then go, remember those civility rules, we're now going to enforce them. No. You need to enforce immediately so that it doesn't get to that point. Once you've let it go uncivil, it can be done, but it's much harder to get back. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Now, we've now created a convivial atmosphere. We're going to all be civil to each other. We've used our words, right? What if we've got a bully? What if we've got someone with an agenda of failure, which we're going to talk about a little later on in the show? What if somebody, some group of somebodies maybe even, has decided to pick on the other people, have decided to be uncivil? That's why before I take on a group, before you take on a group as leader, even if you could use the money and like that, but it won't enhance your reputation if the whole thing explodes on you. So before you take on a group, you're going to talk to the employer and get down in writing, because they tend to not honor their oral explanations, maybe. I like it in writing, even if I think the employer is fabulous. And oftentimes I do. And oftentimes I don't need to resort to writing. I like it in writing. I like a contract in writing, too. It's in my contract. But the employer must give you some power to back the civility rules. So there needs to be an or else. You will be civil in this situation and, I don't know, take turns, not yell, not make noises, not text to other people, which is the new note passing in class, that kind of stuff, right? Right? We understand what civility is. Or else. There has to be an or else. Or else people aren't going to do it. They like being uncivil. They know they're being uncivil. It's not a surprise to them. It's a deliberate act, right? I suppose there are some people in this world, you're making a very good point. Lee and others say some people are kind of naturally more nasty than others. That's a good point. That's true. But those people can be talked to, right? Because you try talking to them first. But if they continue, they know the difference. If they continue, the or else comes into being. The employer must back your or else, because they've got the power to, how about affect a job, affect your employment. That comes to your pocketbook, right? That's a good or else. Mm-hmm. How about only people, I have this a lot because I do big corporations. Only people of a certain supervisory level participate in the negotiation, right? Because they are going to have to be the ultimate enforcement. Well, if you can't participate fully and you've got an unpleasant agenda and like that, the or else is you can't be a manager anymore. You can't be on this level, right? Yeah, that's a good or else, right? The employer needs to be willing also to be trotted out, to be brought out to sit there and see what's going on and to lend their presence to the idea of civility, right? I have in my day done that. Mm-hmm. It's very effective. Okay. A lot of you are talking about agendas. Let's do agenda next. It's not next on our list because I was thinking about it. But yes, a lot of times, yes, thank you. Hussein and others say that people have an agenda of incivility. They want, and it is true. Yes, thank you. Quite a few of you are giving examples. Thomas and others are giving examples of when somebody in the part, one of the participants usually, because it's usually internal, although you will act in a civil manner to everybody, but some of the participants might have formed like a clique, and they don't want, for one reason or another, their agenda is failure. Their agenda is failure. Now, I actually see this, right? Yes. And sometimes it's not even just the participants. Sometimes it might be the employer, too. Because they chose the first participants, right? Yeah, you got to get that straight. You got to get straight exactly who's got an agenda and why. Mm-hmm. And you have to know that agenda, okay, the first agenda that Hussein and others are talking about is plain ordinary, an agenda to make the group fail. This happens, I see this a lot, because if I have a specialty, and I don't know if I do or not, but kind of you get a specialty. If I have a specialty, it is coming into groups that have already failed, but they need to reach a successful outcome. They need to reach a workable conclusion. And I'm supposed to turn them around so that we can work together and, which is going to be our next topic, team build. Make a team out of them instead of a clump, a group of kind of acrimonious people, right? They've really kind of had it. And they don't want to do this again. Mm-hmm. See, that is already an agenda. I don't want to do this. I want out. I want it to not meet anymore. I'm sick of talking about fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And I see this, and sometimes I have the prior leader unavoidably as one of my now participants. Well, how would you feel about that? If you had taken on reaching a successful outcome with this group, had failed dismally, and now they brought somebody else in, the white knights, to come in and be the new sheriff in town, so to speak, and get it all together, would you like that person to succeed in record time and under budget? Even if you're a perfectly nice person, you don't have to be Satan to understand that it would be kind of better for your job and reputation if you couldn't do it, nobody could. Mm-hmm. You have to recognize that as an agenda. I recognize it right off, and I do something about it right off, and I discuss it with the employer right off. I like to know if their agenda matches that agenda. Because sometimes groups are secretly supposed to fail too, for some reason. You got to know these things, right? Because you want to enhance your reputation and not take things that no one will touch. Mm-hmm. That's your participants having an agenda, and your employer may be having an agenda. We'll give the employer accolades and the benefit of the doubt, and say that the employer agenda is a successful, workable outcome. Actually, it's everybody's agenda. But in order to do that, what you want, the outcome, in order to reach success, needs to be defined. You'd be surprised. Yes, thank you. Margaret and others are saying that the first people that have to define what success looks like is the employer. You'd be surprised. A lot of times they haven't fleshed it out. They haven't gotten the details. They don't know exactly what success looks like. My friends, if whoever brings you in has no idea what they want, they won't recognize a successful outcome when they see one, right? They've got to either know it, we have to talk about it and find out what a successful outcome looks like, or they need to be a group participant if that's how we're going to find our successful outcome, if we're going to do it kind of as a democracy and everybody's going to have input. If that's true, then they need to be active participants. And because they won't, in my experience, they will have difficulty accepting what success looks like if they didn't participate in it, right? Because they may secretly have an agenda or they may secretly have an idea of what success should look like. And maybe the practicality of it is not true, right? Mm-hmm. Who else has an agenda? Oh, thank you. Good point. How about your opposition? They've got an agenda that's, well, let's find out if it's opposite to ours. Maybe we're closer than we think. Maybe there's misconceptions on both sides. Maybe we could pool our resources. Maybe we could work together. Now, will their group, their leadership dissolve into yours? Well, it depends on the agenda of their leader. If their leader really doesn't wanna and would be glad of the opportunity of passing along the responsibility to you and your team, that's fine. Yeah, we'll take that on. We will make one group and we will invite you to be here, right? Sometimes the leader is indeed a third-party impartial, and they don't even want to participate at all. They just want to back off. It's not working for them, and they just want to leave. And the groups merge. This is fine. It makes it sound simple, but remember the civility rules and like that. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's possible if you reach out to your opposition, they might not like to be opposition anymore. That's always good. It's kind of complicated. Hey, we're good with that. How about a media agenda? You see that a real lot nowadays because everybody's a blogger and like that, and everybody's got their own agenda. And a lot of times, I deal corporate, a lot of times there are people out there who, for one reason or another, some of them less valid than others, don't like your employer. Don't like. And every time that something happens where they're involved, they want to see if they can ruin it. Excuse me, I take a sip of water. Don't like. You have to know that too. And I reach out to the media. I do. I reach out, not necessarily, well, yeah, me, but I do it very carefully, and usually we ask to have a spokesperson if it's something that's of public media interest and not just internal, right? Yes, because we want to be, I admit this, we want to be able to control public opinion. And the media, whether you like it or not, the media creates public opinion. It does, yeah. I'm going to go for this. You have to really think about this one because Padme and others are talking about your own agenda, the leader agenda. Yes, you might not think you have one, but you do. I know this because we all do. We all have ideas about what's supposed to be. We must be very careful to not allow those ideas to impact unfavorably our successful outcome. Yes. Yes, people are asking about the civility rules. The main thing about the civility rules is not only the enforcement, But the fact that you must be a model of civility. Yes, you. Mm-hmm. Because you cannot enforce something that you do not do. You cannot enforce something that you do not do. You must model civility. Mm-hmm. Let's go to team building. If it's a big enough group, if it's not a very big or very diverse group, and there's not a lot of excess problems in research and I don't know, going on site or something, the whole group is the team, right? Everybody. You're combining skills. You're utilizing experts. You are going forward is the key to it. A lot of it is you're going just working our way forward as team building. Sometimes the mechanism, the way things are done, team building wise, is more subcommittee. Because the whole group is a team, and we all report back to the team. But sometimes you need to, for an example, divide people up. They've formed a clique. There's a lot of research. There's a lot of something that needs to be known, right? There is experts in the group, and they need to think about different topics, right? Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to make your group into smaller teams. It may just be that it's huge. Yeah. And it's hard to handle that many people all at once, right? But no matter what, we all remember that we're part of the overall team, and we all get together and report back to that, right? Team building also takes quite a bit of keeping track, right? Quite a bit of an operational process. You will need someone to help you keep track of where everybody is and what they're doing. And also, as you get more experience in the field, you'll have more than one case open at the same time. And so you need to have facilitators for the team, right? I don't like to pick out of the group. I like to have facilitators, yes. Sometimes they're outsiders completely. They are from a service. But a lot of times, if this is doable, my preference is to make groups and have the leaders be selected by each subgroup, by each group, right? Who's going to speak for us? You'd be surprised. They make excellent choices. It is oftentimes, it's very impressive. A lot of times they pick who will be the leader by who has the most expertise in this area. Well, now that's very reasonable, right? Yeah. And like that. So, and then they report to the whole, and then the team speaks maybe to the individuals also, but to the employer, to the media, and which is speaking to the public. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Quite a few people are talking about if you're having trouble making the team and the people are having trouble working together, which happens sometimes. You do it with care, and I don't know how else to do this. You do it by what you know about the people, right? And some people are not really good at being a team leader and like that. So you have to make a judgment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which goes to our, well, should we do flexible leadership style next? We're going kind of out of order. But yes, I am trying to leave time for the last one, which is food as a tool. Some of this has to do with your leadership style, too. Because remember, we are models of civility and enthusiasm. But we do tend to have a leadership style. Well, once you get into it, once you get some experience, right? And that leadership style should, to a certain extent, depend on the participants and what they need in order to reach the successful outcome. Now, can you change your style completely? I think you always have a foundational personality, but I can actually, if I see that this particular group, and sometimes it's part of a whole, but the people, for example, in this country who are employees of the same organization and working on the same factors need more leadership input than other people do. Well, what does this mean? It means that you might do the same basic idea across the board because we want to have compliance. But in a certain country, they might expect a leader to tell them what to do and not to ask them. You see, it's a different leadership style. And I understand this. It's a need. It's something that they're used to. Sometimes it's even in the corporate rules, right? But even if it's unspoken, you have to know that, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Americans tend to talk everything out. It's kind of a cultural response. Some people in some branches of multinational organizations in different countries do things somewhat differently, although they do get the same successful result. They meet their quota in some way, whatever, in product, in whatever, but they do it somewhat differently, and you have to respect that, especially when you do team building. Mm-hmm. But you need to respect that as leadership style. Some places want to just tell me what to do, and don't nag me to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Which leads us to leadership style and flexible leadership style, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, what you're doing is you're filling people's expectations. You're filling their expectations, what it is that they think they need, what it is that they actually need, and what it is that they'll accept is another negotiation skill, right? You have to understand how much is the minimum. And let's get everybody's minimum together and work from there, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of times there's a corporate culture. And that's a different leadership style, too. You want to adhere to the corporate culture as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Yes. I have indeed heard, had groups where they really don't want to meet together at all. They just want you to do it. Hey, that's corporate culture. They want the boss to say. So you deal with just the employer and give them skills, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And some empathy. This is the next thing we're going to talk about, right? Yeah, we need some empathy. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. You need to be able to understand. And, well, everything we've talked about, right? The compliance, the team, the agendas, and like that. For this, you'll need empathy. Empathy is acquired, in my opinion, through the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? These questions will get to the bottom of what you're dealing with. Now, do you ask them all at the same time? Not necessarily. Do you ask them all in front of everybody? Not necessarily. That's a leadership call, remember? Yes. See, this is flexible. But we need to get to a workable outcome, a successful workable outcome. Easier said than done sometimes, because the people need to understand the importance of the outcome and be able to work together. You'd be surprised, once we get some empathy, once we, yes, use the food as a tool, because you have to stay in the room, yeah. Once we get some empathy, once we understand each other, we can actually get somewhere, even if we're extremely different. Even if the acquirement of empathy has shown us differences in addition to similarities. You'd be surprised. We get together, we reach a workable outcome, people do it, and there's success, whatever it is, right? And then the next time they call up to have a negotiation, there's something else that happened, or the new thing, but some outside thing has happened to change what's in place, they will call each other up. Well, all right, contact each other. You don't use the phone hardly anymore. But they will contact each other so that you can deal again and hang out with these people, right? And what they'll say is, in their own mind, sometimes they say it out loud, this is how I know it, I still don't like, name a group. Because we all have likes and dislikes, and some of us have dislikes more than others. And I don't like this person. I don't like his or her group, but they're an exception, and I can work with them. That's all we want. We want empathy enough to work together to reach our successful outcome. Yes, that's all we need. We need to reach our successful outcome. Let's talk about celebrate every success. It kind of goes with empathy. Oftentimes, when you gain empathy and like that, you kind of tiptoe around because you're not familiar with what's going to happen. That's a good trait. Because what you're doing is you're trying to figure out the subcommittees and like that. But every time we have a step forward, don't forget to celebrate that. Let's celebrate each success. Let's say, look, we really did it. We are on our way, right? Yeah. First of all, it's very affirming, right? Everybody wants to be part of the winning group, part of the group that couldn't get it done for a long time. And here we are. We're reaching out. We're getting along with each other. We're negotiating. Nothing wrong with any of that. Except that people forget how long ago it was that we last had a party or last had, I don't know, something that I could bring guests to. The answer is, let's do it now, right? Right. Let's celebrate every success, right? Yes. And model enthusiasm. Yeah. You need to model enthusiasm, even if you're feeling down that day, and it has nothing to do with these people. You need to show that you really believe that this is a really good idea, and hopefully you do. People are talking whenever we talk about celebrate success, and this is true, and it's a real good point. People talk about making a timeline so that you can see visually how you're doing. I don't object to that. I think it's a good idea. As long as we're not going to spend precious negotiation time negotiating and arguing about the timeline, which I have seen, of course. Yeah. It's a lovely leadership tool. For example, fundraising where they fill the glass type thing, right? It's a visual. And it has to be kept up, of course, but then again, you could have assistance, right? And it is, I think, kind of time-consuming, but maybe not. Maybe it depends on your group. It depends if you need a timeline, yeah, to keep everybody reminded of the next step, right? Yeah, Yes, you need to be quite flexible. Because my experience has been that what you think is going to happen in the beginning, when you start, oftentimes kind of doesn't, right? Yeah. People do different things. Yeah. New facts are found out. I really don't like the law of unintended consequences. So we're going to be flexible. And before we implement, which I think is a very, very important point, before we implement anything from these negotiations, let's call in an expert. Not someone who has a side and will try to squish whatever the information, whatever the issues are, into their preconceived notion, but someone who's an expert and can bring up any kind of issues that we didn't know existed, right? Yeah. The law of unintended consequences is just nasty. I don't want to see unintended consequences. I want us to have thought it through, right? Which means we have to find an expert who will not just, well, testify on our behalf, but someone who really knows something. I oftentimes like to have more than one, especially if the ideas are kind of new, or kind of contentious, right? Because we are going to go out into the world and put this out. So I like to have an expert help to tell me, is this a good idea? How is this wording, right? Yeah. So we don't get kind of blindsided, right? The law of unintended consequences is, well, we didn't think about you. Whoops, where were you when we were doing it? Let's find out about all those didn't think abouts, right? Yes, so that we can accommodate them, right? Yes. All righty. I am going to get to the next one in the list. You guys are smart. Let's do the beef bourguignon recipe. It's been hanging out for weeks, right? Right. Let's do it. So I'm going to make my food as a tool speech, right? Right. Remember that the food is a negotiation skill. It's a tool. It's a tool to bring us together. It keeps everybody in the room. It gives us something to do together that everybody likes. Everybody likes eating, for God's sake. Hopefully the room has smelled really good for quite a while, especially when stuff is on the stove and like that. Before you have food, well, you might actually have to get a permit, but let's not do the legal stuff. Before you get food, you need to take a survey and ask if anybody is allergic to anything, doesn't eat something, or has religious prohibitions. You don't want anybody to be left out or have a bad time. You disseminate this list, this survey results, right? And then you ask people before they bring the food to make a list of what is in it, right? A list with the food so that I can run my eye down the list and see if this is something that I can eat, right? Yes. And if there's any surprises in it, you need to kind of decorate the dish with it so everybody sees it. And also, you need to, I think that you need to have some safe recipes, something that's comfort food wherever you are. My safe recipe is different than your safe recipe. But then everybody can eat them for sure. And I think it's fun to have an adventure recipe because that's something most people haven't eaten, you think. At least it's a good chance that they haven't. And they and you've taken the survey and nobody is allergic, doesn't eat it, or for some religious or whatever prohibition to it. Right? Right. Let's do the, so what, this time we're going to do the adventure recipe. Now, why is this an adventure recipe? It has wine in it. And people get all excited about wine and bacon. Hey, now those are two good things, right? Well, it kind of depends about your principles and what you like. So we're going to call this the safe recipe. It's the beef bourguignon, yes. Okay. First of all, we're going to get the bacon because I really like bacon. Let's have about half a pound of nice bacon that we're going to chop up. Not in strips. You get the strips and then you chop them up. Around here, they have stuff that comes pre-chopped because we do a lot of packaged food in the United States. Let's have about, well, let's make a big batch. You can always freeze it or send it home with people. Let's have about 5 pounds of what they call braising steak, like a rump steak. Around here, they call that stew meat also. Because, quite frankly, beef bourguignon is a very fancy stew. It's just a yummy stew, right? It's got wine, it's got bacon, it's got, well, yeah. So we're going to cube the meat, if we have a rump roast, we bought a whole one, in kind of not too big cubes, because we want it to cook through really well, and we don't want it to be chewy, right? Let's have about 3 tablespoons of plain, just regular all-purpose flour. Let's have the same amount of oil, right? Let's have some butter, about 3 tablespoons of butter. A dozen shallots, 6 garlic cloves. Yes, I love garlic. Y'all can decide whether or not you think that's too much and cut it back. But we're going to crush those. Let's have some lovely mushrooms because it is traditional. We're going to get the sliced kind or else we're going to slice them. You can go fancy on this. I usually go old school and just choose just regular type of mushrooms, right? Yeah. Just the regular, I can't think of what they're called, the little stocky white ones that slice up so nice. I was just thinking about, what was it called? I was picturing the package. So let's have a couple of cups of those. Because they look lovely, and it's got a lot of mushrooms and bacon and stuff in here. About 3 cups of red wine. Mm-hmm. You can decide. You can put in a little less and then put in a little more later. I like to put in not so much, and then I add as the liquid goes down. I don't want it to be too runny. A nice bay leaf, which we're going to fish out. 3 sprigs of thyme, which we're also going to fish out. Yeah? So this is an adventure recipe, bacon, red wine. Do not use red, okay, you're not going to use expensive red wine. We all know this. You're not insane. But don't use something so cheap, so awful. Maybe cheap is not the word, because sometimes some of those cheap wines are quite nice. Don't use something bitter and awful that you wouldn't drink under any circumstances. Use a nice red wine. And not something that's going to make your beef bitter. All right? All right. Let's preheat our oven, 3 1/4. And we're going to make the, we're going to put in one of those big casserole bowls. I like the kind that are nonstick. If it's stick, if it's not nonstick, maybe you need a little bit of a spray of oil. Because we're going to now cook, really. We're going to brown and crisp the bacon, and we're going to add the garlic, right? Mm-hmm. And like that. But the bacon needs to be cooked, crispy. We've already got lovely bacon grease in the bottom of our casserole, right? Right. We're going to take that flour. We're going to coat the meat with it. We're going to set the bacon aside because it's only going to get mixed in and it won't look nice. It's going to get covered with oil. And we've got some oil in the bottom from the bacon. We're going to add the rest of the oil. Fry the beef in batches, lightly browned all over, right? We're going to sear it on all sides. Done. it's all nice and brown and everything. Set it aside. You can set it on the same plate as the bacon, just next to it. Mm-hmm. We've got some butter, right? We've got a couple tablespoons of butter. Add that to the fat that's remaining in the casserole. And be careful, it's going to splatter. The shallots and the garlic. And then add the mushrooms. Another 5 minutes or so. Everybody's all nice and cooked, right? Mm-hmm. Throw everything back into the casserole. The beef and the bacon and like that. Stir in the red wine, right? I tie the herbs in a little baggie, one of those little herb bags. You can use a piece of cheesecloth and a piece of string. Otherwise, it's a pain to fish them out. Now, it's not necessary for taste, but it's necessary for your sanity. So you take the things that need to be fished out, the thyme and the bay leaf, and you tie them in a little bit of cheesecloth and throw them in. Mm-hmm. Cover. Cook for about, an hour and a half until everything, the meat is tender and like that. You stir it around a little bit as you go. I like to serve it with something on the side like mashed potatoes or maybe rice. That would be lovely too, or polenta or pasta, something plain to go on the side. All done. It's easy. It's delicious. And you can, if you don't have too much travel time and you're careful and you've got facilities in the meeting place, you can do this. You can stick it in the oven for, the hour and a half, 2 hours while we're negotiating. People start to drool. I mean, it's so delicious. And it also does take to reheating pretty well, but don't do it forever because you need to stir it because it's going to stick to the bottom. Yummy. Yes. That is our beef bourguignon. It's our adventure because of bacon and red wine. Dare we do the enchiladas? We have 7 minutes. Let's go for broke and get all of our recipes done so we can, for heaven's sakes, pick new recipes. Right? Right. This is our safe recipe. It has some chili peppers and like that, so you might think of it as an adventure recipe depending on where you are. Right? If you are in some place where curry is eaten every day, then curry is not an adventure recipe to you. But it would be to me, because in my area, we don't eat much curry. So it depends, right? Right. I am fond of this recipe. I'm going to say something, and then I'm going to deny saying it, because you have to be careful, of course, and refrigerate and like that. But it's fabulous for leftovers, because a lot of times you've got leftover chicken or turkey or even ham, which would make an adventure recipe that makes it pork, right? Pork would be good. Yeah, meat. You can stick anything in an enchilada because and you can use whatever cooked protein you've got. You put something that's not everybody's able to eat. A chicken is safe. You put shrimp in it, you've made it an adventure recipe, and it's not so safe. You have to go find out if people can eat that. I personally don't usually bury seafood in enchiladas and stuff because I'm afraid people will mistake it for chicken. You have to very clearly put this on a card in front of it and, of course, never serve it any place where people have indicated a seafood allergy or pork. Any place people have indicated a religious prohibition. So here it is, the enchiladas. I'm going to use prepackaged tortillas also. I don't have the equipment or possibly the patience to make beautiful tortillas. If you can do such a thing, you are a much finer person than I am. So let's have a couple tablespoons of butter. I'm going to use diced green chili peppers and not the jalapenos. I think the jalapenos are too strong. But I am going to use the little can of the diced green ones because they're softer. You can also use fresh, but you need to dice it up pretty smallish so that it's nice with the other stuff inside the enchilada. In fact, oftentimes I use a fresh green one and a fresh red one. Yeah, I put jalapenos and that kind of stuff on the side. You would like 6 of them in your tortilla? Go with God. They're right on the side in the little dish. you want sour cream on your tortilla and no peppers at all, hey, you can eat out of the same pot of the dish of enchiladas. They're fine, right? Right. I'm going to use cream cheese. I'm going to soften a 3-ounce package, which is a small package, a tablespoon of milk. Mm-hmm. Let's have a little cumin in there just because it's delicious, a teaspoon. Let's have 4 cups of chopped, cooked chicken, or whatever, as we discussed. It's going to make about a dozen tortillas. Yep. Because you don't want to fill them too full, because otherwise they come apart. And for the saucy part, I'm going to use, I'm afraid, some condensed cream of mushroom soup. You want to make a better, more roux-like sauce, go for it. Let's have some sour cream, like a carton, an 8-ounce carton, a small carton. A cup of milk, and some shredded cheddar. I'm going to preheat the oven to 350. You got to grease the dish really well for this because you want it to come out whole. Mm-hmm. We're going to saute onions and things like that. I use onions on the side. I don't think you should put onions in this. I really don't. We're going to combine the cream cheese, the milk, the cumin, and the chicken. Because it's going to be delicious. It's going to be all kind of cheesy. Stir, 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 all combined. We're going to put this lovely chicken mixture that also has the green chili peppers in it. We're going to add those. We're going to drain them real good, right? And we're going to put that in the tortilla, roll it up, seam side down in the baking dish, right, so that they're all nice. Now we're going to make our sauce to go over it, which is where the rest of this stuff goes. Combine the soup, the sour cream, the milk, some more chili peppers if you like, which is why if you use canned ones, they're soft. Otherwise, not, because you're going to decorate with them. Pour it over the tortillas in the baking dish. You'll notice it really isn't very spicy. Spicy is on the side. I know that people say I cook kind of bland. Well, that's because you've got all kinds of people, right? Yeah. So make the thing so that everybody can add as much spice as they like. And then you put everything to the side. We've got them done already. We have our delicious, cream cheesy, chickeny mixture inside. We've got our nice creamy sauce on the top. Mm-hmm. We're going to throw it in the oven. Well, we're going to cover it with foil because otherwise the tortillas will get hot. They will get hard. Cover it with foil. Bake it for about half an hour, right? It doesn't have to be baked forever because the protein is already cooked. We're just making everything hot and melding it together. Take off the foil. Throw a whole bunch of cheese on top, right, the cheddar. Put it under the heat for about 5 minutes until the cheese melts and all looks delicious. There you are. We have delicious chicken or whatever enchiladas, right? And we've got lots of lovely condiments on the side, right? Yeah, so that you can choose as much or as little as you want on this delicious, soft, kind of sweet thing, right? Yeah. Also, in my experience, maybe I'm not a good tortilla roller. In my experience, the less stuffing you the less lumps you stuff into the stuffing, the easier they are to get out of the pan, like lumps of peppers and onions and things like that. Keep them on the outside. Yeah. My friends, we did both recipes. See, I did promise. Yeah, it was probably good that you put it on the list. So funny. Negotiation skill. Feed people something nice. But it is kind of a negotiation skill because while we're all chowing down on good, delicious things, we're feeling kind of like this is a good event, right? Yeah. If nobody has a prohibition, I don't have anything against serving a glass of wine or a beer, which makes everybody not drunk because we're not going to serve that much. But having a nice time and thinking about things, and then maybe making a little small talk, you'd be surprised. The most, in fact, I facilitate the small talk, right? We network. the most diverse people. The other day I had this. The most diverse people, you would think they have absolutely nothing in common. Absolutely nothing. They're grandchildren that go to the same school. You never know, you see? And they all have kind of warm, fuzzy human feelings about that kind of thing. And it helps the negotiation. So you are right. Food is a good negotiation skill. Being a good hostess or host is a good negotiation skill because it gets people together. And anything that gets people together and gets them talking, that's a skill. That's something we need. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for participating. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.